Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's River to River from It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the 1960s civil rights movement, faith played a significant role. Now is no different. This hour, religion's part in the current racial justice movement. We'll examine how religion and spirituality fit into Black Lives Matter later in the hour. We'll talk with the Reverend Mary Robinson, a pastor of a Waterloo church. Also, Imam Jafar Abdul Hamed of Des Moines and Connie Ryan of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa. Let's start off, though, by talking with Richard Turner, professor of African American Religious History in the Department of Religious Studies and the African American Studies Program at the University of Iowa. Professor Turner, Richard Turner, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Your historical work and reading some about your work online, your historical work goes really to the heart of the demonstrations and the social movement. Tell us a little bit about your studies here, your research.
Well, I'm a specialist in African-American religious history. I do research on the interactions between social justice movements, religion, politics, as well as how all of those elements are expressed in African-American musical performances.
Okay. So give us an historical overview of faith's role in the civil rights movement in this country, not just the 1960s, but we typically think of the 1960s, but going back of how faith has worked throughout American history, tracing from its beginnings to the present.
Well, you know, faith has had a dynamic interaction with politics, particularly in the African-American freedom struggle that, you know, began in a big way at the end of Reconstruction, when the Supreme Court passed the Plessy versus Ferguson Supreme Court decision, which established Jim Crow legalized segregation in the United States until the 1960s. And Bishop Henry McNeil Turner of the African Methodist Episcopal Church was one of the the most vibrant protesters against the the segregation, the separation of Black people from American public life after Plessy versus Ferguson. Yet there were also in that late 19th century period more secular political leaders such as Ida B. Wells, who was an ex-slave and an African-American journalist in Chicago, who actually went to England in the late 19th century to alert the British to lynchings of Black people in the United States that were beginning to reach record numbers in the late 19th century. And of course, at the turn of the 20th century, we have W.E.B. Du Bois, who was, one of the greatest American intellectuals, first Black person to get a Ph.D. from Harvard University, and he was one of the founders of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People in the first decade of the 20th century. So, we have this interaction between the religious and the secular leaders. And of course, as we move forward into the mid-20th century, that's where we really see this dynamic interaction between religion and politics in the black social justice movements. Because in 1955, a black teenager, 14-year-old boy, Emmett Till, who, you know, resided in Chicago, went to Mississippi to visit his relatives, and he was brutally lynched by a group of white men, and, you know, he was beaten, shot in the head, disfigured, and a cotton gin was wrapped around his neck, and he was thrown in the Tallahatchie River. Yet his mother, who, you know, lives in Chicago, made sure that he had an open casket funeral at a church on the south side of Chicago. And, you know, and at that funeral, tens of thousands of black people saw what white supremacists had done to a black, child. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Emmett Till unknowingly, and that procession in the black church in the south side of Chicago at his funeral unknowingly helped to launch the classic phase of the civil rights movement that began a few months later when Rosa Parks, an NAACP activist, you know, purposely decided to not leave her seat in the front of a Montgomery, Alabama bus. She was arrested and you know, for a whole year, a world famous boycott of public transportation in Montgomery, Alabama, went on. And Martin Luther King Jr., who was a, you know, a new black preacher, black Baptist preacher, emerged as the leader of the Montgomery bus boycott. And of course, he went on into the 1950s and 1960s to lead some of the most important demonstrations for social justice and demonstrations against white supremacy and anti-black racism in American history. Also, in that same period of time, we have the emergence of probably the most important Muslim in American history, Malcolm X. And Malcolm X emerged as a very important Pan-African leader in the mid-1960s. And, you know, his plan for social justice as a Muslim with a global perspective about, you know, about racism and oppression was to create a civil human rights organization, the Organization of Afro-American Unity, in which he planned to bring a petition to the United Nations on behalf of 20 million black Americans who were descendants of slaves and, you know, people who had suffered hundreds of years of human rights abuses in the United States.
Right.
Of course, he never got the chance to follow through with this because, you know, Malcolm X was assassinated mysteriously in 1965. Unfortunately, Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in 1968. However, we certainly can credit him with helping to get the Voting Rights Act and Civil Rights Act of 1964 and 1965 passed.
Richard Turner, I want to remind the listeners who may have just joined us, you're a professor of African-American religious history at the University of Iowa. Let's, if we could, in the interest of time, move in more into the modern era. So it's interesting that you say that the civil rights era in the 20th century started with Emmett Till, the horrible lynching there, really sparked the modern civil rights movement. And when we move into Black Lives Matter, Trayvon Martin's death in 2012, I believe, is that the marking point that really kicks off the Black Lives Matter movement here, or even more modern civil rights, racial justice movement?
Yes, vigilante murder of the black teenager Trayvon Martin in Sanford, Florida, by George Zimmerman, launched the Black Lives Matters movement, and it was established by three black feminist activists, Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Opal Temeti. And, you know, they were moving, you know, in a different kind of framework. Essentially, you know, they were animated by black feminist understandings of social justice, about the interlocking nature between race, gender, class, and sexual oppression in the Western world. And also, they were using the tools of a new age of technology, because Black Lives Matters really took off as an international movement through the use of Facebook and Twitter social mm-hmm. media platforms.
Right. Let's focus in on, we're looking at the religious aspect this hour, so I'd like to ask about how that may be different in the Black Lives Matter movement as opposed to the 1960s. Is there a difference, or does faith and
religion? I think there is a major difference. Because, you know, in the Black Lives Matters movement, there is certainly an interaction between the protesters that we have seen in this, you know, in the streets this spring, and, you know, leaders from the 1960s civil rights movement, people like Reverend Al Sharpton, who marched with King and who preached at George Floyd's funeral. However, Black Lives Matters is more of a grassroots kind of movement. It's not based on charismatic religious leadership as the movements of the 1960s were. it's an international movement. It's a black radical movement. And, of course, we've seen how successfully the protest of the Black Lives Matter movement has played out this spring, because we have seen hundreds of thousands of activists in that movement who have been marching in streets across the United States and across the world. Mm-hmm. They have been protesting the police killings of black Americans, recent police killings of people, including George Floyd in Minneapolis, Rayshard Brooks in Atlanta, whose funeral is actually today, and his funeral is being held in Martin Luther King Jr.'s home church in Atlanta. They're protesting against the police killer of Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky, as well as a recent vigilante killing of Ahmaud mm-hmm. Arbery, a young African-American man who was just jogging. And right. Jogging in the streets in the southern part of Georgia, and was killed by vigilantes.
I wonder if I can jump in here and ask you back to our religious theme. We've noticed what has been striking about these demonstrations is that they are not only demonstrations of African Americans, but we have a wide backgrounds represented in these groups, white people of color of all sorts here. And I wonder if that is also reflected in the religious community's involvement in these demonstrations. Are they more than, for instance, African-American churches, black churches involved here in part driving along this social justice movement?
You know, I think what's driving along the multiracial dimension of the Black Lives Matters movement more so than religion is knowledge about America's history from 1619 to the present time among new generations of young people of all different races. And also, I think that, of course, there's a moral issue that's driving the multiracial dimensions of these marches and these rallies, and we could call that religious, and that is that, you know, that I believe that the marchers do not want to see the United States descend into a neo-fascist kind of police state where, you know, the gruesome murder of George Floyd, which we all saw on video, would become the norm in this country. So certainly there is a moral dimension to their marches, but I think that there's just a lot more knowledge about systemic racism among you know, among young people who have taken African American studies courses on gender and women's studies and colleges and universities across the country. And also, I think that America, in spite of some of the horrible things that are happening now with the, you know, the police killings of Black Americans, America is not as segregated as it was before the 1960s. So there certainly is more interaction between, you know, African-American protesters and protesters of different racial groups that we have seen in the marches and the rallies this spring.
Okay, and, Richard Turner, before we go, I have one final question before we get to our other guests here.
Yes, sir.
In your opinion, in studying the long history racial justice in this country, American religious history, how do you see this moment? For sure, the civil rights era of the 1960s was a turning point. How would you describe this moment? Is it a turning point? If so, what kind of turning point would you say?
You know, I hope it is a turning point because, you know, we all had hoped that the 1960s would be a turning point in American race relations. But unfortunately, the great civil rights and human rights leaders of the African American community, particularly the men, were assassinated. Medgar Evers in 1963, Malcolm X in 1965, Martin Luther King Jr. in 1968. Fred Hampton, leader of the Black Panther Party, in 1969, and you know, I certainly hope that what we're witnessing now is a turning point, and that something good is going to come out of all the killing of African Americans at the hands of police that we are seeing. But I think the turning point certainly is that the Black Lives Matter movement has been able to marshal a multiracial coalition of demonstrators across the world, and we're also seeing dynamic leadership in these protests from brilliant African American women, and African American women certainly are the people who founded this movement, and I guess they understand that even in the 1960s, there was a very important religious and political legacy of Black women activists, from Angela Davis to Ella Baker. The list can go on and on in the 1960s, but certainly those were not women who were in the public leadership positions as the leaders of the women leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement are now.
Okay, Richard Turner, thank you very much for joining us in this first part of our program. Professor of African American Religious History at the University of Iowa. Professor Turner, thank you so much.
All right, thank you for having me.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, exploring the role of faith in the Black Lives Matter movement, historically, the role of faith and religion and civil rights and racial justice. Let's talk with the Reverend Mary Robinson now. Mary Robinson is on the phone. Reverend Robinson, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me all right?
I can.
Very good. You are pastor of All Nations Community Church. That's in Waterloo. It's a largely Black congregation, I understand, and you've pastored that church for some 20 years. You are also a chaplain with Tyson Food, also chair of the Blackhawk County Board of Public Health. And Let's talk a few minutes. We'll have to take a break and come back after the break to continue our discussion. But tell us about your congregation's involvement in Black Lives Matter currently. What actions have you taken, and also in conjunction with your congregation?
Well, actually, my congregation is probably more immigrant-based. So we've got Congolese, Liberian, and African-American. We have been involved through myself. We have been involved with all of the protests from the very first one. We've been involved with those that were held in Waterloo, Evansdale, the two in Cedar Falls, and were involved with putting together a memorial service, or at least to express solidarity with the last public service that was held in Houston for George Floyd. So this has been something that has hit not just our community, as you know, but the state, the nation, and indeed the world. Mm-hmm. And there are people who understand what it means to struggle and what the struggle looks like.
And you have been, we'll talk about this, we're coming up on a break, but you have been involved in marches going back to the 1960s, is that right?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. What is your strongest memory
that
of those marches?
Correct. Well, it's interesting, I was listening to Dr. Turner, and sometimes the local experience can be a little bit different than the national. And I was, as he was talking, I was comparing what it was like here. I was involved in Waterloo when we started with our demonstrations and what was going on here in the late 60s. We really didn't get things really together in the way that we wanted until the early 70s.
Reverend Robinson, I'm going to interrupt you. We're going to take a break and come back, and we'll hear more about how the marches in the 1960s that you participated in compare with today. Also, other aspects of how religion is playing a part in this social justice movement. More with Reverend Mary Robinson in just a moment. Let's go into this break with singing from a video that's been going viral. This is a 12-year-old gospel artist, Kedron Bryant, a young singer from Jacksonville, Florida. Have a listen. We'll be back in just a moment.
I'm a young black man doing all that I can to stand. Oh, but when I look around and I see what's being done to my kind, every day I'm being hunted as prey. My people don't want no trouble. We've had enough struggle. I just want to live. God.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking this hour with Iowa religious leaders. We're talking about the role of faith in the Black Lives Matter movement. Also, historically, the role of faith and religion in civil rights work in this country. We'll talk to some other leaders in just a moment, but let's finish up our conversation with Reverend Mary Robinson, a pastor at All Nations Community Church in Waterloo. She's pastored there for some 20 years. Reverend Robinson, let's talk about some of the discussions that your congregation, you are having with your congregation as this Black Lives Matter movement has swept the country and continues. What are you talking about specifically?
Well, essentially, we're looking at in terms of scripture that Micah 6 and 8, we really seriously believe when the Bible says that we must do justice and love mercy. And to me, that sums it all up. We don't have a choice. If we are to call ourselves a Christian, then we have to do that. We have to speak out. And Zora Neale Hurston says something that I just love. It's a guiding force. And that is, if we keep silent about our pain, then people will kill you and say you enjoyed it. And so as we look at those two principles, we don't have a choice. Even if we look at the life of Christ himself, he reached out and he helped to change the moral landscape, the physical landscape of his times, and even today, of course. And we don't have a choice. We have to, if we are going to say that we believe in the Bible that I believe in, that whenever somebody is hurting, then we have to be there. We have to speak out. We have to stand up for what is right and for what is just. And it's the civil rights movement of the 60s and the 70s, at least in terms of Iowa, it was a little bit different than it was nationally. And we had the pastors. We had Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. We had Malcolm X. We had those on the national level that were using religion to guide them. However, I really have to say that in Iowa, in Waterloo, and in Des Moines, it really was a grassroots movement. Is that to say that religion did not play a part? Absolutely not. It was because that those who were protesting and those of us who were out there on the line, we related to the Jesus that went into the temple and drove the money lenders out. It was a Jesus of love, but it was also a Jesus who spoke about justice and doing what was right. And to be very honest with you, the churches came along and it became a full-fledged movement of unity. But it really was a grassroots movement. The difference with what I remember from the 60s and the late 60s here in Iowa and the early 70s and what's going on today, it was grassroots, but there seems to be an age difference in terms of who the leaders were.
Reverend Robinson.
Go ahead.
Before we go, we have a couple of other guests to hear from this hour, but I wanted to ask you, if you see your church, which is has a largely black congregation, if you are united with other churches, perhaps multiracial churches or white churches, in the scripture that you quoted, in the goals that you see for followers of Christ in this case.
Absolutely. And this is what was different about today's movement in terms of the interaction. And I think Dr. Turner is absolutely right, because of the knowledge, because of the internet, because of the information flowing so quickly. I see a much more involvement of, in fact, some of the protests I've been at. To tell you the truth, the majority of them, sometimes depending on the location, have been those of other races. And that to me is so empowering, because there's more interaction. At the time that we had the earlier movements, you have to understand, it was total segregation, so much more segregation. And today, because of social media, probably because of the changes that have come, there's a lot more interaction between the races. And I think that that has played a huge impact upon what we are seeing in terms of the involvement, not just here in the U.S., but worldwide. People who don't even know us, have obviously never been here, but they are taking up the cause, and it's causing them to look at the injustices through the eyes of Scripture, through the moral principles that we claim that we stand on, and it's causing them to take up the banner.
Okay, Reverend Mary Robinson, pastor of All Nations Community Church in Waterloo, we appreciate your time and giving us the picture from your congregation, your community of faith there in Waterloo. Reverend Robinson, thank you so much.
And thank you for having me.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News this hour, checking in with faith leaders around the state to see how they are figuring into the Black Lives Matter movement and how faith and religion figures into social justice movements. Let's talk with Imam Jafar Abdul Hamed. He is the imam at the Muslim Community Organization of Des Moines. Welcome back to our program, Imam.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So tell us, how have members of your Muslim community there in Des Moines been involved in the current Black Lives Matter demonstrations movement?
Yeah, thank you so much for the question, and thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to share what we do or what our community is doing regarding Black Lives Matter. Every Muslim or every person that belongs to the faith of Islam believe that we are all created equal. We are all created by God from one single male and female. So what we are doing today, we are reminding our community members and we are reminding our neighbors and we are reminding everyone about what our prophet did in the 6th century. That was in his last sermon. He reminded mankind, not only the Muslims, mankind, that we are all created from Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve, we are all equal. So no Arab has superiority over non-Arabs. And non-Arab has no any superiority over the Arabs. No white has any superiority over black, or no black has any superiority over white. So this is the effort that we are doing now to remind everyone to remember that principle that the prophet gave to us, so that we humble ourselves and to appreciate the differences that we have in terms of color, in terms of everything. We should remember that God created us and put us into different nations, into different colors, different tribes for a reason. That reason is to appreciate, to recognize one another, to appreciate one another, and to know that the noble person or the best among human beings are those who have piety, who have God-fearing in their heart and do good to preserve life and to do good for mankind, not people who are trying just to establish their own interests. No. Mm-hmm. This is what we are trying to everybody understand, that we are human beings. We are all equal. We must strive to do whatever can benefit human beings entirely, not specific tribe, not specific region or race. So this is the effort that we are doing. So in our mosque, every Friday, the sermon that the imam will give is always based on this principle. We are reminding ourselves and
right.
everyone.
But Imam Jafar, in the minute or two we have left, have you been involved in the demonstrations, in the protests at all, taking part?
Yeah, I have been involved. I didn't go to demonstration, but there was a gathering, I think about 3 weeks ago, where the mayor himself, the mayor of West Des Moines, and some of the elected officials were there. I was there. I was invited to come in and talk to the people, to the participant people who were there. I was there, so I spoke about the importance of preserving lives, the importance of respecting one another. And then I concluded the gathering with a prayer to God to shower us with his mercy, to give us understanding, and to bring peace to us, and to let us understand the reasons we are all created, so that we embrace one another. So we took part in one of the demonstration or one of the events that was organized by some of the leaders in order to support to bring peace and harmony among mankind.
Okay, Imam Jafar Abdul Hamed of the Muslim Community Organization of Des Moines. Thank you for joining us for this time, Imam. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And finally today, let's check in with the executive director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa. Connie Ryan joins us again. Connie Ryan, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Ben.
We have just a few minutes, but remind us quickly what the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa is all about.
Certainly. We are a statewide nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. Really, what we attempt to do in the state is to celebrate religious freedom and making sure that all voices are heard, including people of faith and no faith, on a broad spectrum of issues that look to create a welcoming state and to encourage folks to be part of the public dialogue on many different issues that impact our state, and really championing individual rights as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So not only Christians, but Unitarians, Sikhs, Hindus, Buddhists, atheists, agnostics, Muslims, and Jews as well. How has the work of your Interfaith Alliance of Iowa been affected by the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, we really have been engaged in supporting the work that the Black organizations, including Black Lives Matter, but a lot of the different organizations as well, being a support and really amplifying the voices of those Black advocates and organizations. So we've been involved behind the scenes a lot of the times and helping to support the work with some of the rallies and such. I did speak at one of the rallies at the State House, but we really see our role as engaging with the organizers and the organizations and lifting up, amplifying those voices. And we are going to begin some work of engaging faith communities, predominantly white faith communities, in their role of being involved mm-hmm. in this time of civil engagement. And
do you think that do you think that's needed, that white communities of faith are not as involved as they might be, that it would be better to get them more involved in this Black Lives Matter movement?
I think it's going to take all of us. I think we all have to be committed to the idea that we're going to address this issue head on, and we're going to really use the momentum and the energy that we're finding in our times now to make a difference, to move our country forward when it comes to addressing racism and working on racial justice.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned those agnostics and atheists, also a part of your group. They're often left out of the conversation, aren't they?
They are. And so we're very careful to make sure that we are as inclusive as possible, because at the end of the day, a lot of our work is around religious freedom, and people who are atheist, agnostic, humanist, and such, they want to be part of that conversation too, because religious freedom obviously is very important to them as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. So clear that up a little bit. If someone says they are an atheist, it means that they do not believe there is a God, but it doesn't mean that they don't believe perhaps in some other form of spirituality, does it?
Right. And, you know, I don't want to speak on behalf of people who are atheist or agnostic. They get to define that for themselves. But generally speaking, yes, atheists typically don't believe in a one God, a theistic kind of belief. But they often are very spiritual people, same as somebody who is agnostic and not sure what, you know, if there is a God or not. But they're many, many times very, very spiritual person.
Mm-hmm. Connie Ryan, how many members does the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa have?
You know, that's really hard to gauge, Ben, because we have supporters all over the state, and they engage with us in different ways. And so, you know, best guess are, you know, thousands of Iowans who work alongside with us, sometimes very directly, sometimes indirectly. It's just a hard number to really pinpoint.
How do you view religion? Religion, you have discussions about religion here in the case, hopefully doing good, being backing some good social change in society, but religion can also do harm as well, can it? So how do you discuss that in your group?
Yeah, so in every civil rights movement, in every really social justice movement that we have ever known as a society, religion has been squarely in the middle of that. And that's on both sides of the equation. So it is folks who are deeply religious and fighting for their rights or other people's rights. But often, as you say, oftentimes it is religion itself that has caused that harm. So if you look at women's rights, if you look at civil rights for people who are Black and brown, if you look at LGBTQ rights, religion has played a role in creating the harm that we find ourselves in society, and religion being used to justify taking away people's rights. And so a lot of people who are religious are doing, making change in how we are as a society and moving us forward because of the religion. But they also sometimes do that because religion has done that harm and they want to make amends as well on behalf of their faith. And that's across faith traditions. And we see people involved in these movements really from every faith tradition, as well as people who don't subscribe to any particular faith.
Mm-hmm. What other? We have a couple minutes left. What other social issues are you involved with there at the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa?
Well, we do work on a broad spectrum of issues, and so not only a variety of civil rights issues, so civil rights for people who are LGBTQ, reproductive rights, immigrant rights, racial justice issues, just that whole broad range, worker rights. But we also advocate on behalf of public education, judicial independence, just a really broad spectrum, because religious freedom ties a lot of that together and making sure that religion is not used to harm people as well.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you spoke recently at a Black Lives Matter rally. I believe you mentioned you were one of the only white speakers there. So what was that like? The messages you wanted to get across, what were those messages and how were they received? Are you there? Connie Ryan, are you there?
I am there now. I lost you for a moment.
Okay. I was just saying, I'll repeat my question. You were a speaker at a Black Lives Matter movement recently, one of the only white speakers, I believe. How did that go? What were your messages and how were they received?
It was an amazing experience to be part of. I was invited to be part of that by a group of folks who were organizing that, Des Moines Selma. And it was just such an empowering event for really more than a couple thousand people that were present. What I talked about was really the role of people who are white, because as a white woman, I just needed to name that and our privilege and our role in this fight to ensure that we address racism as a society and work toward racial justice. But I also took a moment. I had read an article earlier in the day, and I took a moment to talk about, as a white mom, and I have two adult children, and our particular responsibility as white moms, white mamas, if you will, to stand alongside and be with the Black moms who are just struggling because their children are in harm's way, and we have to stand up with them and have their back and say, I'm with you. So both of those messages I tried to convey in that crowd. And then the role of advocacy as well. We were standing in front of the State House and turned to the State House and said, we have to make changes and we have to do that in policy because that's how we're going to move forward, and we have to do that together.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful scene. You were part of. Connie Ryan, Executive Director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa. Thank you for joining us this hour.
Thank you so much, Ben.
Well, while the national number of daily COVID deaths has declined in recent weeks, new confirmed cases are on the rise in almost half the country. Tomorrow on the program, It's a Politics Wednesday, we'll analyze the policy surrounding this continued pandemic. Analysis from Dennis Goldford of Drake University and Jonathan Hasid of Iowa State University. That's Politics Day tomorrow. Of course, many other topics as well to address that we're hearing in our news. River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.